for the first choice house for every man on earth. So this is ready. This is to the machines. And that's a problem. And this is what we can do, what we see. And this is, for example, was what with Hadid and Schumacher. He says, I'm the first one who really realized that this is possible. I want to make a city as one person for 2.5 million. I want to earn money and became famous with that and so on. Mm-hmm. And there will be a lot of, that will be totalitarian and there will be a lot of struggle because people don't want to have that. And this is not the solution. This is ready. Then we can just finish each kind of development.
This is what I mean, that everything looks exactly the same, that it's no background, like not culture, no history, every building will be, all the city will look exactly the same, and
there's no difference. Not necessarily. The way, it, for example, now Hadid is doing it, it's without any tradition. It's just one simple algorithm. If you go like Semper, or if it was with Palladio, and then you can have, or if, as you've seen with the morphing from the Corbusier to the Zimpa, you see that you can have a scan of traditional Swiss architecture and build 5 million extra of these houses, and they look like the existing ones. And there's no principal difference. Very Swiss, very differentiated, and so on. And this can be done like this. It's ready. This is to the machine. And the question now is, what is the rest? What can be done else? What is the next level? So we have to control this somehow.
Yeah, this is the thing that you have to. This is the part which is said about learning the tools. This is the one part, and the other part is the philosophy of the background and find the source of the.
Yeah.
Of the, and you have to know what you want to achieve in the end. Because the parametric design is very, like, there's the part which is focused to the designer, let's say, and the other part which more architecture focused. Like, it's completely different way.
What solution should we choose if we have so many solutions? If you choose one solution, what's the criteria for choosing that solution, and what will it do with it? Because it lasts 100 years, and every 10 years things change, and we speak to the world new words, and new dead words come to us. What do we do tomorrow? What do we do every other day?
Yeah.
And what is the right choice?
I think we need to find a material that can change its shape.
Yes, you did. Yep, that's right.
Well, one answer, the abstraction of that question would be to say, well, we need to do anything in such a way that that we can ask us the same question again in 5 years. And it would be like, it's not that the one solution which will be the right one for the next 10 years when we know that we want to actually have changes in 5 years and in 10 again, but that we need to find solutions that are very exciting for us today, but still leave it open for any situation in the future to ask themselves the same questions again. That would be the ethical answer to that dilemma, which is an old one. I mean, it's just the troubling thing is just that it seems to be one of the first times, or at least one of the few times in history where people even had to ask themselves that question, because never before, I mean, a competition was always not something people decided we want to have, but it was like the condition within which people were living. And today, because technology are so strong and the social structures in many ways are becoming so monocentric, we have to start considering that the competition is actually not such a bad thing against finding the best solution. This kind of striving for the ideal or best or optimal solution has very much to do with gaining more weight in competing competitions with others, because you could think, well, if I get closer to this ideal, then I must find more support, and then I will be stable for a much longer time. And these kinds of ideals, we can print them out. I mean, we have imagined them according to rational logical thinking, and that's precisely what the machines can just print out, produce. And they can do that, they can calculate and do that in ways which are much more powerful, faster, they can incorporate many, many, many more parameters, they can deal with so much more data at once, etc. So, it's no problem anymore. So we have to reverse the game and start to consider competition as that which is difficult to maintain. So how can we be creative, do something that is challenging, that is new, that we have fun with, and that creates the ground for more competition, actually. And that's also why we are always speaking in terms of growth. So it's not about creating stable structures which are there for a very long time. It's like structures which we want to be there for a very long time, but we know that they can only be there for a long time if they can incorporate competition and changes that happen over time that are not foreseen in the first moment, that are able to grow old, if you want, and to become, and it's a different mindset. That's why we are trying to find all these metaphors and these stories of approaching how it would make more sense.
If we are following the Moore's law, and if we transfer to our world, and if this change occurs in the physical world, I'm asking if this change is this change according to Moore's law suitable to physical world at all? Philosophically speaking, in 1,000 years, maybe all is going to happen will be the one change that is so fast that we maybe not even, that our life is going to be that change in every part of the second, I don't know how to say. Maybe that it become one organism that is constantly like processor of the computer, just making high-speed calculations of our life. What is the end of it? I cannot see.
But Moore's law has an end, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Moore's law has an end. There is, like, in a few 20, 50, 60 years, it is, has reached its limit.
What has an end?
Moore's law is because of the width.
Oh.
It's only growing because the copper or the fibers get always smaller, but at a certain point they will reach its limit.
I mean, it already has come to an end. I mean, processors speeds haven't been increasing anymore. Instead, they just put more processors next to each other.
Mm.
It's only memory that's still increasing.
And also, like, this endless availability of power of, like, mobile phones, computers, there were trials to translate that into architecture. Weren't there, like, in the 70s, for example, all these, like, industrial manufactured houses in the eastern part of Germany, for example, like, very, very cheap, very accessible for everyone, but the quality didn't rise to that approach. So I think it's difficult to take this approach and translate it into something physical and still trying to be, like, cheap and make it independently accessible for everyone.
But the question I don't understand you correctly, but it's like we are not looking for the great new mobile phone or something. But it's more like if the climate changes and it starts to, I don't know, the lake starts to just have more water in regular intervals for quite some time, you can maybe start to calculate with that happening. Even though for 30 years during your youth it was not there. But if 5 years in a row and in regular patterns which you see are showing tendencies, it is there, you can start to integrate it into the way you, I don't know, plan to have your garden or whatever. I mean, that's just a metaphor. And this kind of tendency, I mean, it is very unlikely that people will develop their social exchange in a backwards vector, that they will stop exchanging as much as today. Probably there will become very different qualities of exchange, it is already happening with junk mails, or with, we have got different qualifications of where we pay more attention and where less. But it is very unlikely that we will go back to the communication behavior of migrant parents, for example. We can't even, I mean, our whole thinking has so much adapted with that. It will probably, I don't know in which direction it will go, but it is here. So this kind of communicative presence to each other, to the places in the world which were distant, the possibilities to just go anywhere so quick. I mean, all these things are here, and even if oil is running out and airplanes will be, I don't know, stigmatized as the worst thing in the world, and no one will be able to fly, we still have, there will be other ways just to do it. I mean, there already are airplanes by solar, driven by solar, or we will go back to boats or whatever, but the we know the feeling of how to be interconnected, and I don't think this is going to go back.
No, I wasn't, I was just trying to translate this approach somehow into architecture, into the built environment, how this endless availability, this abundance, this overflow of everything can be translated into an architectural thing, scale, whatever, approach, building type, I don't know.
I think by taking it like the ground, or like material or physical components, which have always been basic for architectural thinking, to integrate this kind of new elements in a similar way, and then I don't know what to make of it, but to not to regard it as something that needs to be added on in order to fulfill a function, or to be warded off in order to fulfill a function, or in principle, but to integrate it as a climatic component of the place where architecture is being created.
It's strange. Of course, if you have a building, then you have a certain size, and at the end there's stones or wood or whatever, or some kind of construction, and they shelter parts of your life. Yeah. And over the time, this has not changed. Yeah? But the meanings of the components, the kinds they are put together, and so on, this changed dramatically. So now I'm really struck by the idea what Paxton with the Crystal Palace did with this kind of construction. Yeah, in comparison to, for example, to Versailles, with the manufactured within a craft in a manufacture production, with Versailles. I think there's some serialized craftsmanship with Versailles. They put it in a proper order and so on. And then with the understanding of thermodynamics, of production, of logistics, with the understanding of new kinds of financing, with the understanding of getting use of the energy sources of coal, you had other kinds of materials and so on. And then he is producing completely new building components, and which are another material, other forms and so on, and which especially have as a part no identity. As it's the first time that but it's just the shift that the piece is interchangeable extremely. So, and the result is that you have very small but traditional styled columns, but they are 1 million of them instead of 10,000 out of stone, out of metal. And then you have a serialized construction, and you have this enormous palace there. So, and these kind of which infects the whole building. Now it's back to conventional apartment buildings in the cities and so on. It's the whole kind of production, of financing, the building type, what is built for, and so on. All these kind of things changed completely. And at the end, it's of course, it's some components fit together to build a house, but they are in complete other the network, and then how they are organized, how they came to this place, and they're completely changed. And the meaning of these components is how they come there, what is where is there similar usage of similar parts, how was the construction, and so on and so on. And the more abstract levels, on the geometrical level, on the level of the actual parts are there. Of course, there's some matter, and you put them, and there's glass, there's metal, there's stone, and so on, and you know, there's a building out of that, around people living there. But the story is completely changed.
But still, people prefer living in like buildings from the 1900 than in garden houses.
Yeah, but one can no, they do not want to live in buildings from the 1900s. They want to live in buildings that look like the buildings of the 1900s. They want to have super comfort, they want to have telephone, they don't want to have the heating system of the 1900s, they want to have
because the 1900s were considered, the buildings are considered of better quality, or because they are better, or
no, there's some spatial order, there's some kind of attitude and living. We think people live there, but if you have an original 1900 building, nobody would live there, because it's a lot of moisture, and it's a lot of noise across the house and so on. No, they want to live in a house which looks like, but with the comfort of our times, which is a complete other story. And now they want to have it with with low energy, no maximum efficiency, but it should look like the old one. But it's not the problem. Yeah, we can do that, of course. But people don't want to live in these houses. There's wind blowing through, it's cold, it's and it's not
it has to be built in 1900. They don't want to have a house built in 2010 that looks exactly like a house.
No, they want to. They want to have this original, which is carefully refurbished and technically updated, and so on. Double glazed because of the comfort, and so on, and so on. And this is what I think is interesting to look at, and we will have it in the first module, and look at it. is that we, on the one hand, have some objects, and on the other hand, we have the different levels, these kind of symbols and meanings and so on, how this is constructed, how this is, what kind of values we have there, how this is made, what this is appealing for, whether you understand that and not, that this arrow is on the computer with a similar intention and so on. There's a complete network of different levels of symbols on each object. You can see how this is produced, how this is put together and so on. And these symbols are independent from the object. And you can find a lot of these symbols here in my computer, which are other company and other product and so on, a lot of similar things. And this is working because it's working here as well. So and there's a population of these symbols, and you can see the entity of this object, so this is geometrically thought, or you can think in the kinds of this kind of representation of this arrow here, there is a similar arrow here with a similar function, my talking about that, the kind of production of that, the kind of how this bottom is done here, how it is here, which kind of factory, so which kind of economy is where, whether how it's dealt, how it's come to. So there are millions of different perspectives to the symbolic level, and the symbols live on millions on dozens of hundreds of millions of objects, and they just use the objects to be instantiated, and the object is only an aggregate of symbols, a very arbitrary aggregate of that, and you just can turn it around and bring your intention to these networks of fluid symbols around there, and which condense to these objects from different perspectives. So then, of course, this machine is another condensation for my person, my observation with my background, then from you, and so on. So then you have this kind of marketing across, and so on. And it's very interesting that you see that some networks, symbols, territorialize yet to a certain point, get real. But the existence of that and the explanation for that, you can't explain that with this object. You have to look what it means, what it had, what the history for that is, and so on. You have to deterialize it on a symbolic level. You have to talk about that. You have to make diagrams for that, and so on, if you really want to understand that. And if you want to have a new object, our idea is not to construct it from scratch on the geometry, but to look what are the principal symbols and let these kind of things condense in a new object. So the idea is, like the energy in the cable, that in principle there's a cosmos of symbolic elements, of symbolic operators. It's simply there, like the energy with this example, it's simply there. And design is just to make a condensate for a certain point, a certain territory, and bring that to a point which is able to be stable, and which people like to accept at this a certain position. That's just the way around what is first. So first in this idea, if you draw it, is that you have specific things you can address and add that. This is the thing with the clouds or ghosts or spirits of symbols, populations of symbols and so on, all the stories about that, the multitudes about that and so on, which is around, it's principally there. You say the pre-specific, all these kind of stuff is pre-specific in the symbolic level, and then you bring it back to the arithmetic and then to the geometry. And you will find solutions which are much more powerful, much more differentiated to certain needs and so on than you can imagine now. But and do not really know how to do that. But it should be things like that, because if you have this specific thing and pathway, then you will have the machines which compete with our design intelligence, and the machines will win. Independent which kind of questions you ask, how differentiated your questions are. If you have a geometrical understanding of your world, the machines are better, because they are made out of that, and they're made for that. So you can ask any problem. Yeah, and if the problem is first, then it's out of the machine world. So the machine can easily do that. So I really want to stress out that this is not a sophisticated discussion. I really think that the major crisis we have is because of this misunderstanding on which level the actual technology takes place. And we are really frightening about this power, and we are running in totalitarian situations if we do not learn to discuss on the right level. And Hadid with Schumacher is one harmless question for that. The CO2 discussion, for example, it's awful. That everything, if there is less CO2, you can do any bloody technology and establish it in the world. It can't be, yeah. For example, with the nuclear plants and so on, because there are less CO2, now they're building nuclear plants. And this is very. The problem is that this is really. If you're intelligent and you want to have think about problems and so on, that I can't understand that we can't put the future of our planet towards one single calculation about CO2, and everything is deduced from this bloody CO2, which is completely arbitrary. So, and for intelligent discussion, this is awful. This is like a bomb. Yeah. And we have to overcome. And people are anxious, and they want to, and so on. It's like CO2 is like this photograph from Apollo, from outside. Yeah? It has nothing to do with our actual world. And people are anxious, and then they say, okay, if there's CO2, this is good. And if there's more CO2, that's bad. Okay, then we know what is good and bad, and then we are fine. But this is a problem, that we always try to calculate these kind of things. And then we're running out of resources. Well, recall, resources are with numbers, nothing more than numbers. And we are afraid that we are not able to build our existence on numbers. And that's clear, and therefore we are afraid. And they were counting and counting, and they will find the big number. So it's a CO2 number, and then we think this will be a good.
And also, to imagine that numbers are not entities might be very difficult for us. But for there are many texts, and texts mean things people were able to write in a way that is still here today. We're documenting that there were cultures where they didn't have numbers separate from the items. So two telephones would be a different name than one telephone, and 10 telephones would still be a different name. So this step of abstraction that there is something like numbers which can just be applied generally to all things and make them comparable was immense. It opened up so much potential. And for the people before that, it was absolutely unimaginable. What should that be, a 2 or a 10? And until And that's the major point in the 19th century, that then, modern times, whatever, but in that area, within the last 500 years, that it became problematic to assume that numbers are that which allows us to count things, because there was no idea anymore what abstract the most elementary element should be. In geometry, the elements were clear. Or in the application to physics, you had this old materialist materialism, the atoms, the old atoms, and they were all incorporated into entire systems of thought, how to explain the relations between them. And what happened in the last 500 years, sometimes in between there, is that this structure, which was very stable for more than 2,000 years, with Euclid's systematization of geometry, which is that which is realized in the machines today, is becoming but one of several possible orders. And that's when numbers are suddenly functioning. They, in the 19th century, Frege philosophers tried to give another definition of what numbers are, and they tried to give a functional definition by saying, well, numbers are sets, and the numbers crystallize according to how the sets are being related to other sets. So, but then you had the paradoxy, well, what is the empty set? How can you give the number for zero in terms of set theory, for example? And these were all the discussions that were dominant throughout the 20th century in philosophy, dealing with that strange situation that we are so powerfully applying symbols and we have no clue what they refer to, or what we could think that they are referring to, what we are experiencing, that what they are. I mean, not in theory we have no clue what they refer to, but in reality we experience that they have reference, because the way we talk about things has effects. So we experience these effects, but we have no, yeah, we have no system anymore how to account for them. And that's not something that we should want to solve, but I think it's very important to, about any, whatever you are doing today, it's really such a major change that our generations are experiencing, and it's a great privilege to look at that and to start to make sense of how we can get more stability or whatever, or how we can rearrange the things in a way that somehow pleases us or others or whoever, it doesn't matter. But these changes, they are very, very real, they are there. And they span in a very long history.
I think, for example, if you go to more dedicated architectural things, I think with the with the brands, for example, with the marketing and the medias and the kind of photography about buildings and so on. So nowadays it's very important that the building gets into the magazines. Much more important that it's built in most of the times. This is something where the buildings goes into this medialized channel. The same with the media facades and so on. You have the screens and the surfaces and the adapted, and the houses, they just evaporate a little into this symbolic space. So the house is not only in one place, but in millions of places in the media and the internet, all this discussed and so on. And this becomes more and more important in comparison to the actual house itself. And so there's a connection and a coexistence between these two, the symbolic area and all the media, for example, the kind of how it is discussed, and then actually architectural brand, how it is made out of that and so on. And then the actual building, which is a condensation out of this brand. The brand is done out of the condensation, kind of territorialization, and then a territorialization on another location and so on. This kind of rendering and de-renderings and so on. This is a game where the symbolic level becomes more and more important. The same, for example, if you can do the same discussion with an observation, for example, with the energy. We're in a discussion here and know it pretty well. In last year, it was cheaper to reduce the the CO2 emission of a building. If, for example, a Swiss building was built in 1970 and you need a renovation to get it emission free, for example, it costs a certain amount of money. And in 2009 it was cheaper for the reduction of CO2 to invest not in the renovation of the building but in photovoltaic in Spain. So the result is that energy is out of the quantitative calculation of the building. It's only a matter of comfort any longer. We just have to discuss about that. You can't calculate it any longer, the energy terms. It's just an economic thing, how much money you want to invest, and which kind of comfort you want to have. It's not a question of resources of energy any longer. It's out of the equation. So it vaporizes to the symbolic level. And a network, smart grid, however it is done, is organizing this this energy balance and the CO2 balance. But it's not the question of a certain building. It's a very important piece of technology and driver for the technology in building. It's on the symbolic level. It's not any longer part of the house, but of the network. That's astonishing. And the same with the brand of the building and the architectural firms. It's just, yeah? And it's important that this building is done by Herzog Gebauer or Sumto or Hadid and so on, because there are so many other famous ones which are connected with the brand and all the discussions about that, millions of articles and so on. So all this gets more, so the symbolic level gets, and the network level, and the deterioralized thing in architecture gets more and more important, which frees you enormously in the kind of actualizations you can do at the location. If you, for example, the energy is out of the equation as a quantitative criteria, out of the equation of your building, you can build fantastic things which have been impossible with the energy quantities included. You will need these big windows and the big walls and so on. You can extra thin and illuminate it and whatever you want. It's an enormous freedom for architecture. And it's just there. This will be constituent. So it's in any aspect it will be like that, and nobody really has a clue about what's going on there. But prices 2009 is energy in Switzerland is out of the houses, right? And they're still driving in Minergie and low exergy oil houses and so on, and all these norms and certificates, low energy. That's nonsense. From an economical, from an ecological point of view, it does not make any sense to talk about these kind of things in this way. From an economical point of view, it's nonsense. So it's just tradition, it's reactionary stuff. In 2009, 2005 was another story, but it's just turning this kind of thing. We know it relatively precisely with energy, and it will be with other terms where we are very similar. So this is always, this is fancy, if politics for example, people say that and I really dislike these kind of, as an architect, and I'm teached by Fritz Haller and then Wachsmann, Buckminster Fuller and so on. All this is the line of heroes, and they made this globe. Of course, he did. Buckminster Fuller in 1946 made this patent on this squared globe and so on. But in these times, they architected a lot with global systems, with infrastructures and so on. And therefore, I really like this kind of thinking about architecture in terms of infrastructures, and we call it narrative infrastructures. I can't really understand this. Like this, for example, Rifkin I heard a lecture in Mexico City in May this year. Rifkin is writing popular books about science, technology, politics, and social impacts of that, and so on. And Rifkin is the second story. I think I should talk. The first story is about Loving. This is the Rocky Mountains Institute, or the corresponding institute is the Wuppertaler Institute. This is the research institute of the German Grüne, die Grüne, this is the Green Party, and they are trendsetters in the Green discussions. And the Wuppertaler Institute is the city Wuppertal. It's a famous research institution about green technologies from the 70s on. And the same is with Lofkin's, with the Rocky Mountains Institute. It's an institute in the Rocky Mountains, US-American, and they are doing research on green technologies. And green technology means they state something like an ecological footprint. Yeah, and they find out that the actual ecological footprint, if we behave like today, there's only place for the footprint of 1 billion people, and astonishingly it's just the amount of people living in the first world. Yeah, then the planet is full. The footprint covers the whole planet. So it's 1 billion people. So they're calculating that since the 70s. And they say, this is not good, yeah, because we are 5, 6, 7, and now we are nearly 8 billion people on Earth, 9, 12 or so. So, and they say, this is not good. And if the footprint, and this is the calculation, is for 1 billion, then we have to save our footprint, so make some place for other people, for the Chinese, yeah. And then they are, for this 48 years, they are calculating, and they are categorizing all the machines which are consuming energies. And they make a catalog, and then they make research, what are the actual innovations, technical innovations. And then they say, okay, we can, for example, exchange the light bulbs getting energy against energy saving lamps, because it's a new technology. This saves this much money, this costs this much money, and so on, and footprint goes smaller, and so on. And he's doing it with the cars, with electric cars, and blah, 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 and they have 500, 600 different machines with the energy consumption, and then they have strategies how to improve these machines with this technology, what is the cost, and so on. They make a ranking. And they say, if you do that and so on, then you can reduce, and this is a famous book called Factor 4, if you can buy the same quality of life, if everybody is using this new kind of technologies, and everyone behaves like that, driving a train instead of car and so on, then there's place for 4 billion people on planet Earth. So. Still not enough. And the problem is, two things is, and they are saying it for 30 years now, and they are still saying that. And there's no solution for 8 billion. So, the problem with that is, first, you calculate a footprint. So it's one single number. That's a problematic term. The second is, you concentrate on certain machines, and you do not have focus on systematic innovations. For example, computer and information technology, they're blind for that, because this is a cross discipline and change the whole game. So the whole set of machines is another one, and this can't be done with, they're thinking in cars and bicycles and lifts and in light bulbs and so on. So, and the third is, so you're blind for the real innovation, because of the categories. And the third is, you only get access to this community of the people who can live on planet Earth by joining this level of technology, which we didn't reach today. So even the new ones need this kind of technology. So there's a technological story, which can't be is no solution, can't be addressed. So for example, photovoltaic is out of their scope. The very simple, as I told you, the very simple solution of photovoltaic is not in the calculation because they're blind for that or because of this system. They're looking in the world in a certain way, and they get this reflection and they're anxious. And telling this story that the Western world has played on the planet, and if we really try hard, then another 3 million can come if they behave like us and believe in technology. Crazy. So, and they're trying it for 40 years now, and there's no improvement of the footprint. The footprint per person gets bigger. So they're still doing that, and they still get some orders also from the politician, from the New York Times, the most important intellectuals of the last century, and it's nonsense, yeah. So, or for example, this is a follow-up of the very interesting, of the of the story of the limits of growth. This was after the first oil crisis. There was a very famous analysis of the world. First, the oil crisis, that's my personal very secure belief, is the oil crisis started the first in 72, 6 months after the Bretton Woods. So the money was connected to the gold, and they cut this connection, money to gold. So the money, and 6 months later we had the oil crisis, the energy crisis, the first one. So the problem was that people did not understand how to manage the money without an anchor, and they need to balance it. And therefore, a lot of peaks at the beginning, the same today. So, but we named it the energy crisis, the oil crisis, because we do not understand that something has no anchor. And we do not want to believe that. Therefore, it's an oil crisis, because the oil prices was so volatile. So, in reaction to that, they asked a computer at MIT, I think it was MIT, not sure. What are the resources of our world? So they had a very primitive computer. Your mobile phone is 10 times bigger, minimum, 100 times. And they asked this computer with a very simple arithmetics, what are our resources? Make a prognosis of our planet. So like this Apollo program with a one photograph of the whole world, they make one simple algorithm about the world. And they got the answer that there will be a lot of limits of resources. But it's only the algorithms, primitive algorithms. And they were really frightened and wrote big books and said we have to save and blah, 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 reason. But it's only very few differential equations. And it's an echo of these equations. And nobody before that time asked a machine about the world. And then, astonishing, it's really astonishing that people really get afraid what the machine is telling about us. And they say, these are the limits of growth. Incredible. In reaction to the energy crisis, which is a financial crisis. And then this kind of the Greens and then this kind of institute started, and they're still calculating what can be done better. And they know exactly that nothing happened what they expected to do. There's no improvement in the calculation because the calculation keeps the same, of course. And all the catastrophes they saw that the half of the world population will die, there will be not enough food, and traffic will be, everything, look there, didn't happen. Yeah? Why? Don't know. So it does not mean we had no problems. But these tools are too, too primitive. This is a reflection on very primitive tools we are calling into the world, and there's a reflection, and oops, we are astonishing about what we are able to think, and we think we're able to think with obviously kind of with the fascination of the machines we just had done. So and this is the same with the now with actually with the in 2010 with the ecological footprint. So still there's only 1 billion people been able to live on this planet. So it, and this is a calculation by the Western world, and it's 1 billion. And therefore all this struggling with China, who gets the resources until because there's another billion. And they want the same resources, yeah? And this is real conflict. And they're just ignoring that there is enough energy. And they're struggling around. And then Rifkin, this guy, and another one of the 100 most important intellectuals, he says, because of the people are so friendly to each other, if they're in family or in the neighborhood and so on. And we all know we have global problems. And now we have a big opportunity because of the internet, we can have a global village. We know there's a global village. So we need empathy, as we learned it from our village, from our family, empathy with the whole world to solve our problems. Yeah? So we have to sit there and say hello, hi, and so on. And we have to do that every day, and then everything will be fine on planet Earth. Yeah? And they're telling these kind of things, 100 lectures a year, writing big books about that. I can't believe that. And the situation gets crazy. Because just they're talking on the wrong level. So and in our term, the most radical and for me most frustrating stuff is with Hadid and Schumacher. This kind of parameterism and the kind of aggressivity in claiming an ultra fast functionalism, brutal fast functionalism, and say this has to be because it looks like nature. And this is an argument people really have to accept. And this is a strange situation. Therefore, I think it's not. So we are in a position that we are really independent at DTH, at our chair, at my person. I know a lot about these technologies. Yeah, and therefore I can't understand what's going on there. So just to help that, and I think just to reflect these kind of thinking will give you a guideline to, and this is what we want to do over the years, that you formulate your personal architectural attitude, which is solid for the next 10, 15, 20 years. You will be lucky that you don't have to change it every day to get the next contract and so blah, blah, blah. And get a straight line and be happy with that. And I think this is possible. And therefore, this relatively fundamental thinking at the beginning. Virus.
Coffee break.
Already?